Welcome back to Incremental, the Continuous Improvement Podcast. This is episode 102, our practice edition, where we go over improvements we made throughout the week and tie them back to lean principles. I'm Uriel Eisen of Austere Manufacturing.
And I'm Devin Bodoni of Like and Precision.
And you've got a sweet, sweet quote.
Continuous improvement is not about the things you do well. That's work. Continuous improvement is about removing the things that get in the way of your work. The headaches, the things that slow you down. That's what continuous improvement is all about. From Bruce Hamilton.
What a quote. I love that. I feel like the longer... Yeah, this is... I mean, last episode we kind of talked a lot about this, but when I started doing this, I think this is the part that was completely lost on me, and I could have read that quote 10 times and I'd still be like, eh.
Whatever.
I guess. I don't know what that means.
But. I'm going to go buy more roughing mills.
Exactly. Yeah. No, so like that's just more and more what I notice is like, there's no, I mean, okay, I think we've talked about this, but people self-report that 85% of their working day is creative and value add. And in audits, it tends to be flipped. So 15%.
Yeah.
And so if you think about it, it tends to be way more effective and cost effective to focus on the non-value add portions of the work.
Yeah.
Which is just really counterintuitive because it's almost inherently not where your focus is, right? Like you are a machine shop. You think about machining,
right?
But actually,
right,
it's all of the non-machining things you have to do to run your business that is the easiest and cheapest, tends to be the easiest and cheapest ways to get time back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like even just within the world of machining, like in the sort of the order that you should approach machining to reduce cycle time, in cut time is always like the last thing.
Interesting.
Right? Like it's the highest risk.
Right.
There's the most like variables in play. Like altering it has the highest risk.
Right. So you can snap an end mill. You can throw your part. You can get a crappy surface finish. You can get your part out of tolerance.
So many things.
Yeah.
There's like a million and one ways it can go wrong.
And so where do you start typically?
Well, out of cut time. So, and it also, that's the part we tend not to think about, right?
Right.
Like we focus on machining. So we think about feeds and speeds and cutting, not like
transition moves.
People do think about it, but yeah, transition moves and clearance planes. And
I mean, even just like SMED, your setup times.
Yeah. All of that.
Yeah.
Everything out. Yeah.
So
we're just so short-sighted.
Yeah. I mean, this is just top of mind for me. Talking to people about buying, like signing up for Arda.
Yeah.
This is the crux of the problem with selling that product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that I'm like, oh, hey, you do X. Do you want to deal with purchasing? And they're just like, I've not thought about that like once. Like, I don't, why are you talking? No, what I need is, right. And they're kind of like, that's not the top of my list, but it's funny because I think the top of your list tends to be very expensive.
Yeah.
Whereas this is still, we'll buy you back hours a week or hours a month, right? So like, why wouldn't you want that? I mean, the top of your list is sort of like five axis machining. I mean, in this sense, do you know what I mean? I mean, it's not the top of your list, but it's sort of like, where are we going? Five axis machining.
Right. Yeah.
And that is very expensive. And what if you had a really cheap way of getting all the time back that you would need to use a four axis machine and achieve the gains you're expecting to get from a five axis machine?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like if you're using it for indexing, you can just have another setup. And what if you could get that time back?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like specifically on that topic, cause I've had that same thought quite a bit.
Yeah.
And like slight tangent, but related, I think just in the last few weeks is the first time I've sort of like had the like genuine realization that like me not working in the biz, like in like critical daily activities on a daily basis is like actually something that could happen at some point.
It's so cool.
Right. Like I've thought about it for years. Like,
you know, right. Like you hear people talk about it and you're like, ooh, crazy. Yeah. I wonder what that would be like.
That's a place I'll be someday. Like similarly to like 80 is a place I'll be someday. Right. But it's not like on my roadmap.
Yeah.
So just recently I've been like, oh, that actually feels like it's not within reach. Like it's not going to happen this month or probably this year even.
Yeah.
But like I can sort of start to at least pick the pathway out from between the trees.
Hmm.
And simplifying a lot of what I do and systematizing it on a daily basis seems like a big part of that. And on the five axis thing,
right, like you now, don't have to be creative with work holding.
Is that, yeah, kind all of the things. There's so many things, yeah, I do right now on the programming side where I'm like, this is something that I can do on our machines, but the only reason I can get away with this on our machines is because I've been doing this for 10 years now and I have like,
right,
seen all the pitfalls and like trying to create a rubric that would encompass this part as a money-making proposition with the equipment we have right now is like, it's borderline, you know, it's
right,
potentially achievable. But then when you also like take in like a kind of a growth strategy, right? Like the cap on that, I think, is pretty close.
Interesting.
Whereas like if we move into five axis machining, create like a very robust and simple way to approach parts with that, all of a sudden the ceiling is like quite high.
Right. Like I remember
low
not too long ago, you took a stab at handing off programming.
Yeah.
And it seems like you ran into what you're just saying now.
Yeah.
Which is that there's a lot to think about.
Right.
That is very part specific.
Yeah.
And on a different machine, like a five axis, a lot of that would go away.
I think so. Yeah. I think
that makes a lot of sense to me.
There's still a ton of work to do in terms of templating, not just like specific like templating, but like as a concept.
Yeah.
Templating, yeah, workflows for machining. But yes, I think you kind of like come in on the ground level of a skyscraper instead of like bringing someone in already at the top level and being like, well, we're here. Nowhere to go.
Not sure what you mean with that.
What am I trying to say here exactly? Like, I think with our current machines, with the parts we're doing, we're pretty close to the top of what our capability is ever going to be.
In terms of capacity or complexity? Or
complexity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of like what we can achieve on those machines.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think if we switch to a five axis workflow, I think we're kind of coming in at the ground floor on like what,
like there's a lot of room for,
yeah, there's a lot of room for growth.
Interesting.
While also systematizing.
Yeah. I mean that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I could see like with five axis, you don't need to know a ton to be able to make, I mean, okay, this can piss a lot of people off. But like in a lot of ways, you don't need to be as creative. Maybe we say that.
I
to
think
make
so.
A lot of parts because your, yeah, your access is, like I know I spend a good amount of time when I'm creating new parts is like with four axes, you're kind of like, okay, op one, we're going to hit these three sides,
mm-hmm,
and then op two will hit these other three sides. And if you have a funny, weird middle angle, you're kind of like, well, if I kick it off axis, I could hit that, but then,
yeah,
I'd be on a side milling here.
Right.
And then, okay, well, I don't want to be side milling. I want to be face milling. So
yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
I think obviously there's complexity and pitfalls to five axis machining.
Yeah. And if you watch Dr. Phil,
yeah,
it's clear that there's like a lot of, you can get very, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. But also it takes some of the guesswork out on that creativity side.
Yeah. And I guess if you have a low skill programmer on a four axis machine.
Yeah.
And a low skill programmer on a five axis machine, or maybe low creativity or whatever, the ceiling on what complexity parts you can do,
yeah,
is very different.
I think maybe that's it, is the distinction between creativity and like rules, right? Like I think five axis has pitfalls, but I think this is coming from somebody who's never done five axis machining, so disregard this if I'm completely wrong.
Skip forward a minute.
But I think you can kind of create some rules around what are the common pitfalls in five axis machining.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of the pitfalls in four axis machining really do just kind of come down to experience and being able to like visual, like in your head, take apart and like roll it around.
Right.
And think through the whole process, which is, yeah, creativity and experience and hard to replicate.
Right. And like do we need to do a third op, or can we creatively get to two ops?
Anyway.
Some improvements.
Big exciting one that I didn't actually do any of.
That's the best kind.
Our dear friend Avi created a integration between the Fusion tool library and our Airtable system.
That is huge.
It is huge. Yeah. Is you and I were kind of chatting after the fact about how a lot of these, well, both of us are not good at coding.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can like get a lot of these physical systems really far. And then if you are engaging with computers in any way, there's often this like small chunk at the end that you need to get it over the line that involves coding computer stuff in some way or another. And without it, it really falls flat.
Right.
So this kind of just came down to a single point of truth problem.
Yeah.
And getting our, basically our Fusion library is our single point of truth for our entire tool library.
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere else that we engage with it on the shop floor is through Airtable. And so we needed to keep them.
Interesting. So if you make synced. An update somewhere, now it will propagate.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And where this kind of really kind of came into play is with the integration of new tools and making sure that those come in with the appropriate information and traceability.
So that when you walk over to do some tool setups, you're actually working with the available tools in your library or the available tools with all the correct stats or what?
The main use case is like, I'm programming on a Wednesday afternoon. I realize we need a tool that we don't have currently.
Mm-hmm.
So I order the tool. I enter it into the library. That tool arrives and someone unpacks the box and they say, what is this supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
And now they can go to Airtable and there's going to be a view that has anything that's been added and has not had the card printed out for it.
Oh, cool.
So, and actually I should say that this isn't fully spun up. We're still like running it on a test library to make sure it doesn't destroy anything.
Smart.
But that will be the use case basically.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. An improvement I did not make. Sam has started working on flowcharts to start to try to kind of build a playbook for how we run the shop.
Yeah.
Back to what we discussed last episode with the switching and prioritizing, you know, if the CNC is stopped and the sandblaster is stopped, and the parts in the degreaser need to be moved. Essentially, where do you go first?
Yeah.
So pretty cool to see him. That was, you know, I didn't ask him about it. I think it was just something that's been bothering him. And he's really been, it feels like coming into his own with the, like, just on, like, kind of getting what this is all about, which is pretty cool. Like, for a long time, he definitely made good improvements, but they were either often something we had discussed or were kind of what we were talking about last episode with like very operational improvements, right?
Yeah.
And not just the like very cheap, very quick things that just make your life clear and create a system where there wasn't a system.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool to see. So
nice.
Yeah. I haven't looked at it a ton. I mean, I took a quick look at it, but it looks kind of, I'm not sure if it's organized by time or task or just starting to understand which tasks are prerequisites for other tasks to start to inform the prioritization, but just getting a visual on how everything flows through the shop is kind of cool.
Yeah. Nice. We ordered a bunch of anodizing equipment.
Very cool.
To start seeing if we can build a reliable process for that.
Yeah.
Funny, in having conversations with people, we've also gotten some recommendations for anodizing shops that might be a better fit for what we need.
Oh, cool.
So we're also going to explore that.
Yep.
But the main use case for this is decent amount of the time, our schedule is complicated by anodizing lead times.
Mm-hmm.
And so in those cases where that is happening, it would be nice to have an alternative.
Yeah.
I think we will still, like, I don't think we're trying to become an anodizing shop.
Right.
Our goal would be to still run all of our batch work and anything that's not on a tight timeline through a bigger shop.
Interesting.
Because I think they'll just do a better job for less money. Or not necessarily a better
job. They're not lean, so.
I think they will do a good job, but I think they will be cheaper.
Right. It also might be that for you, with the employees you have and the training they have, there's other ways they can spend time that are just higher.
More beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that quote that they're always repeating in the Acquired podcast of, like, the do what makes your beer better.
Mm.
Like it's a Bezos quote or whatever. Like
only do things that make your beer taste better.
Yeah. Anything that's not, like, value add effectively in your business.
Yeah.
Don't do it if someone else does it well. Value add
is an bookkeeping fall into that.
It's not the thing. That's actually the example. They say this quote and then they recommend one of their sponsors, which is a bookkeeping company.
Yeah. That's funny.
So I don't think, like, to put it in those terms, like, anodizing is not what's going to make our beer better, but being able to provide parts on short lead time is potentially what's going to be.
And that feels like it might unlock, like, you might just be in a, like, who else are they going to go to who can machine and deliver an anodized part in?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are shops. There's lots of shops that do this.
Yeah.
We would like to be one of those shops because there are, I think, fewer of them.
I would imagine.
And then even the other part of it that I keep thinking about is, like, even if we aren't doing something on a crazy tight timeline, if it gives us two more weeks to work with on another part in order to kind of, like, level our workload or run things through in a way that's, like, not having to expedite due to not having that added constraint, I think there will
be
huge benefits there.
I could also imagine if you are experiencing a slow period, pulling that in-house would let you fill more billable hours.
Potentially.
I don't know. Yeah. Interesting.
So anyway, that's
cool.
A journey we are just undertaking. We'll see. We're going to do a bunch of testing first and see if we can even do it reliably.
We should compare notes.
We have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe we started
a
thread.
We have not. I saw a funny t-shirt that was a bent nail.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, when the boss has been spending too much time in the office but still thinks he got it. I can see that.
I had a moment like that recently, walking over to a machine and, like, starting to, like, poke at stuff, and I was like, I don't remember how to do this.
Yeah, I've had that recently. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome and also kind of, like, not awesome.
Who am I?
Who am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it makes me think I need better checklists and SOPs because, like, if I can forget how to do it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be good to document.
That's real.
So I mentioned, I was away for a wedding, my wedding, and there was a burger buffet that they had a line of burgers and then the condiments, and there was a huge bottleneck at the condiments. And so I asked the venue to move the, condiment bar so that people could walk down both sides of it, because it was self-serve anyway, and add a second line of tongs, and that essentially doubled throughput, which was kind of funny.
Rob and I were in line when you asked that, and we cracked up so hard when you walked away.
Yeah, I was just watching it. It was like, because, I mean, there was a lot of people who wanted to get food, and it was just funny to see. Then I talked to them later, and she said that normally they do the barbecues outside, and when they arrange them outside, that is just inherently how it is because of the space.
Oh.
And it's sort of back to the quote from last episode. It's just hard to ask why a lot.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking about it further about how you could increase throughput on that. And I think there's definitely ways, But it was funny. I mean, with the addition of some tongs and a change in layout, you double the throughput.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would be like a bunch of fancy machines you could. Oh, the other thing that they had going on, which I rearranged, was on the condiments bar. If you make a burger, you want all the flat ingredients first. Uh-huh. They had the lettuce as like item 2 out of like 5.
Uh-huh.
So I rearranged it so the lettuce was on the end because everyone kept like going and then going back to the lettuce, and that slowed things down. I don't know. How much did it change? Well, I think rearranging, like letting people feed down both sides was a significant improvement.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that reordering the items in there was, but it was funny to me, like that would be a great thing for them to have an SOP of. Because delivering food quickly, like they don't have an SOP, so it's never going to improve, right? Basically. It's only going to improve if the one person is on staff who's like weirdly like anal retentive about like ingredient placement.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that was funny.
Yeah. Let's see here. We added, again, not me, another desk to our shipping station.
Mm-hmm.
Just we were like kind of short on horizontal space, which I have a bad knee-jerk reaction to, just like get very uptight about adding any horizontal space because I've seen it go wrong so many times.
You mean of just getting covered with like lingering?
Yeah, just being badly allocated, badly utilized. But I think right now it's good. So that allowed us to set up the shipping computer that we'd bought.
Nice.
Set up the multiple Rollo printers that we'd bought that were just kind of languishing. So there's more work to do still. It's not, definitely not optimized, but I think it's been good.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was starting to become a pinch point of people needing to use the computer that was like the laser marking /
we had the same
shipping
thing.
/ purchasing.
Yeah.
And now that there's different people, that all used to be one person. Now it's different people. It was becoming a problem.
Interesting.
So that was a good one.
Very cool. As a joke in the groom room where I was getting ready, Kyle printed off Arta cards of all the different liquors that were in there. So my brother does a lot of like beverage stuff. And so he had an array of very nice liquors. And Kyle put a card next to each one, which I didn't notice until like halfway through. I mean, it was as a joke, but it was then funny. I walked up to see what was there, and instead of looking at the labels, I was looking at the cards because they were way easier to read. They were in a standard format, so I knew exactly where to look on the card for the information I wanted. He had color-coded them, which I didn't notice. He told me this, but he had color-coded them by type of liquor. And then also there was a visual control. So there was an image of the bottle. So it was very easy to see that you were in fact looking at the right label. But it made me think, so one of the things we have on our to-do list with Arta is to make it not only print cards, but also print labels for the front of the shelf.
Oh,
which would have an image and just the title or something like that.
Oh.
Maybe a QR code so you can easily access the record. But it just seems like a really nice aspect would just be to very quickly create labels that are extremely informative and clear.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is higher on the list now.
Yeah. Cool. We started the first steps in preparation to shut down our direct to consumer business.
Oh,
I guess this is technically the first place I've announced that anywhere publicly.
Wow.
But just sort of coming to the realization that it's a very small proportion of our business at this point. And I feel like it's taking time away from things that would be much better allocated.
Interesting.
And it was sort of like, we would either have to really revamp it from an organizational standpoint and then also put in a lot of energy into marketing and sort of, you know, building that side of the business, or just be done with it.
So
we started doing all of our inventory and making sure it's accurate and prep for.
I see. So that when it's stocked out, it is stocked out and you don't sell items you don't have.
Yeah, that specifically. And then also I think we're gonna do a Exactly. And I think we're going to do a sale and just try and
be done with it out
in a short term.
Cool.
Short time frame.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Kind of the underlying, I guess, improvement there is focusing on what we do well and what makes us money at this point, instead of trying to be this scattered kind of, we do a little bit of everything business.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think what else is there. I mean, I guess like elimination is like the best improvement often.
Right. Yeah.
Like I think Elon Musk talks about that. Like the best part is no part.
Uh-huh.
Seems like that could be applied to your business as well.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, get rid of it. Yeah. Very cool. We've been continuing to roll out our two-bin system on our assembly parts, and then also redesigning the bins slightly to make them easier to pull parts out of. Right now, we don't have a very big internal radius to transition from the floor to the wall. And so when you reach in and try to sort of swipe a part up, you know how you like grab a part and swipe it up the wall? It doesn't just smoothly transition.
Oh,
it like hits the wall, and then you sort of have to like rotate it 90 degrees up onto the wall and then slide it up. So there's quite a bit of fiddling there. So we're trying to figure out if we can just print bins that have a better transition, or we're going to, the alternative is to design a new shelf that has essentially a bin that is optimized for picking on the front of it, and then you just grab a new bin of parts and dump it into there.
Oh.
That feels less in line with lean principles, in that like you're over processing, dumping the bin from bin to bin to bin.
Right.
So not ideal. But anyway, we have to try a few things.
Cool.
To see what works.
Interesting. We updated information on our stock tags for better visibility. It's been interesting transitioning from our old Airtable system to this new one, having to like remake of a fair number of the physical documents and kind of sorting out what information is necessary, what information is extraneous. So we were initially the stock to, I was like, we're just going to scan everything. Like, you don't need to have much information, just be like whatever, the part name and a barcode. And having gone through it, like scanning is great, and also sometimes it's just a waste of time,
right?
When the information is clearly easily visible at the physical thing you're looking at.
Yeah.
So we've added some more information to the tag.
I think the obvious next step here is everyone in the shop wears Apple Vision and it's just all AR. Oof.
Sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, functional, but
yes. Nice. We have been, so I think I mentioned this, but we did an install in Denver of Arta cards at a company out there. And in doing that, I wanted to deliver the best possible version of Arta to them. And so I was very diligent about adding images to everything.
Oh, yeah.
And also diligent about doing comprehensive color coding.
Yeah.
And with that install, both I realized just how valuable both things are. So we had built them in because people asked about them, but we weren't doing it in my shop.
Oh.
And it is so, so helpful. I think we talked about this, but like we do have pretty badass visual cortex.
Yeah.
And
once or twice we talked
about it. Yeah. Like you just like look at a photo and you had this on your cards too. It's just so, so much quicker than reading and then thinking like, okay, what is that exactly? Oh yeah. It's this thing.
Yeah.
And even especially as you get more and more items in the shop written in one place, like what are wipes? Are they the hand wipes we use, or are they the little wipes we order for doing cleaning in the paint booth? What are, like, you know, I just on and on. Like the second you see a photo, you're like, yeah, drill battery. It's like, well, which drill battery? For which? So I can read like Makita or Metabo or whatever, or I can just see, and it's very easy to recognize.
Nice. That's great. Yeah, in the realm of systemization and not having to spend time sort of, sorting, urgency, triaging, like all of this stuff, as we work to hand off ordering even more, basically initially I had handed it off to Ariel. Now we're handing it off to Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
Ariel and I had developed a very effective system, but there was still quite a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
And in trying to sort of like explain the thought process, it became clear that there was more work to be done here.
Okay.
And also trying to make it less of a thought process.
Right.
Because of the variability of our work, there is still a fair amount of sorting and sort of triaging that still has to be done, at least for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
But we added a very simple thing, which was we have for our stock ordering for each work order. Initially, we had a thing that was just like, this is not ordered. This has been ordered. What was the third thing? I think it was like we had it on hand or something.
Okay.
And we just added a simple label, which was, this is urgent. And it was just kind of a way to filter out things. Like we might have a bunch of work orders that are within the system, some of which we shouldn't really order material for 2 weeks. Others,
you should have ordered 2 days ago.
Exactly. And there is some sorting done in the physical board.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's not always super explicit. So this was a simple way for one, for me to communicate if I have a comprehension of urgency, because I've done the quoting and the job intake. And then secondly, just a simple way to be able to, while you're doing the order, only see the things that you need to order in that moment instead of having to hold it all in your head.
I like that a lot. I have a question for the audience that probably doesn't belong in this episode, but this just made me think of it.
Yeah.
We've been struggling with this issue. We use ShipStation to do all of our shipping and basically showing an order. We do the assembly, pack the order, and ship it.
Yeah.
And it's feeling a little limiting in terms of continuous improvement because it's not a flexible platform. Like, they have cool workflows. That none of them are real, as far as I can tell, really optimized for like assemble to order. Instead, it's like pick to order. And so we're kind of kicking around the idea of moving it all over to some sort of either like probably Coda, maybe, because it has integrations with different things. Because then it could do like sort of what you're talking about made me think, like when I put in, sometimes I'll put in like sample orders or something that are urgent, and then I have to walk over to Sam and be like, hey, can we get that out today? Like, there's no just, and I can't really add that functionality as far as I know.
Yeah.
So kind of trying to figure out, it's really nice, I'm realizing, to be working in systems that are flexible.
Yeah.
To a degree that a lot of systems are not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I just looked it up. Our prior had been ordered, not ordered, or waiting on vendor response.
Okay.
So that was just a simple thing to be like, if I'd sent out an RFQ for this and we hadn't heard back, I didn't want someone else to then also send out an RFQ.
Makes sense.
It's not a good look. So that was a cool little improvement that we made.
Yeah.
That was pretty impactful. And then a second aspect that Aiden did that was very cool. So he did a little automation that, if something has been changed to ordered, it shows up in a view for a week from when that change was made.
Oh,
so that it's effectively sort of a receiving workflow.
Right.
So you can confirm, like, what, instead of having to go through everything and look like, did I order that? Did I order that? Did
That's
I order
awesome. That?
It just shows like, this is the stuff that someone has at least, you know, maybe it didn't get ordered, but somebody clicked that this was ordered in the last week. And so a simple view to just kind of separate
That's
that
awesome.
Out from the noise. So that was, I actually personally have not used that, just saw it this morning, but it's cool. Cool change.
Very cool. Well, I, had a busy week, so don't have any more improvements.
A busy week, not in the shop.
Yes, exactly. Thanks all so much for listening. You can find the podcast at Incremental CI on Instagram. Please feel free to reach out. You can find me at austere_manufacturing on Instagram, austeremfg.com, or Arda is at Arda.cards on Instagram and Arda.cards on the internet.
You can find me at Lycan_MFG on Instagram, LycanPrecision.com on the internet. And feel free to reach out. We love to hear from y'all.
And we have a Patreon, a link in the description. If you enjoy the podcast, the best thing you can do is tell a friend about it, share a favorite episode. And if you're feeling like it, check out our Patreon and support the podcast.
We'll talk to you soon.